Mr. Pat Godwin, Rio One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Godwin?
Right near Shandon.
And when?
For 1/11/25.
And could you tell us a bit about your background in Limehouse? You know, what your childhood was like?
Childhood? Well, I had what they called a terrible childhood. My father was always at sea. When he came home, he used to go into the docks. And in them times, you've got to remember that money was scarce, so the men wanted work. Well, him being in the docks, I've been up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and there used to be a crowd of us in the family, because there was 11 of us. And my mother used to cart us all down to the docks with him, in with his little tucker bag, all us kids there. And as soon as they called out, "We want one," he used to say, "Here's my family and they want food." And he used to get a day's work. And that went on for some years.
So when he wasn't at sea, what was he at sea with? Merchant Navy or?
He was in the Royal Navy, First World War. But he went into the Merchant Navy as a donkeyman, because he was a stoker in the First World War. And then he went, after he came out of the Navy, work was bad, so he went into the Merchant Navy. That was before I was born. And he was a donkeyman in the Merchant Service.
Now, what's a donkeyman?
A greaser. Because they were known as donkeymen. And it got to a stage that it carried on, and eventually, way back in the early 30s, it got to a stage with my parents that they split up.
Now, what sort of living conditions were you living in, I mean, in Limehouse?
Well, I was in Shadville then, when all this, because I was little. I was born in the Limehouse maternity home there.
But where did you actually live then?
In Shadwell.
And what sort of house did you have, or flat, or accommodation?
Well, it was buildings, which was known as the trust buildings. And, let's see, third floor we lived on, because it was just one block and you had about 10 flats in them all the way through. And those conditions there was one bedroom, one living room, and a little toilet with a steel tub in there, like one of the old bath tubs. You had no dustbins or anything like that. They swept the place up. They used to sweep it into this toilet, and there was a hatch, a shutter. And they swept it down, it used to go straight down the bottom in the communal bin. Many a time I fell down that bloody thing. And when the family split up, because my mother had moved from Juniper Street, that's when it split up, she moved from Juniper Street in Shadbourne, and she moved into St. George's Street in Wapping.
And you went with her?
Oh, yeah, I was with her. From Wapping, and that is the first time my father had ever came home from sea. He came to Wapping, and that is when the split up happened, because I can remember it as a youngster. He took me with him and took me to the docks, because I used to have to go down to the docks on their ship. And he took me with him. Well, through the airing, through the night and all that, us kids never slept. When he got me on that ship, he knew I was tired. He put me on his bunk, and I was away for the day. But he brought me home, and that was the last time I saw him. Much to my regret, because I'd sooner have had him. But
how did the family cope?
All of us.
How did the family cope with us after they had split
up? My mother, she ended up with a live-in lover. That they had a choice. because, as you know, it was known as the RO then, the relieving officers. In them days, they used to come round and inspect, because where we moved to in St George's Street, there was two bedrooms and a big living room, but it was communal. We was on a first floor flat, which was a Jewish flat. They were Jewish doings. The landlord there was a chap named Yarmolinsky. And we lived over the top of the shop that can, like, where the Jews was making clothing. All right, my mother had a job with them, because she was a machinist in the younger days, so she happened to get a job with them, making skirts and all that sort of thing, which the Jews did. Well, then, a living lover, this here living lover, came in. Now, when these relieving people came down to check on us kids, it turned out to be that it was either a choice of being put in care, or some way she had to have sufficient money to keep us going, so that she can keep us going. And that is when this living lover came in permanent. He vowed to look after us as his kids, not that none of us liked him. And it went on from there, that with him there, it was one of them strict orders. Take your hands out of your pocket. Clean your shoes. You couldn't do nothing right. No matter what you did, you couldn't do nothing right. In fact, my eldest brother, as young as he was at the time 17, he joined the regular army. And then my next brother, the one younger than him, he said, I've had enough of this. He moved out and he went into the merchant navy. Where are we? We was in St George's Street then, where so that's when my mother had a living lover and we was going to be put in and on, and he came in and took over to stop us going and home.
But you were saying it wasn't very happy.
Oh, it wasn't happy at all. It wasn't happy at all.
What about your education? What schools did you go to?
Well, the education which I had, when I was in London, in Wapping, was, Shadwell and Wapping, I was at St Lucas Street, or Johnson Street and Lucas Street. They were Catholic schools. That was where the friction was between my mother and father. My mother was Catholic, RC, my father was CRV. And as soon as he went back to sea, she shifted us back into an RC school. When he came home, he demanded that we went back into the Church of England. So education was, it was numb 1 week and we had a teacher the next week.
How did you do at school? I mean, did you do well or did
well,
you
I done well. I done well. I can't say that for all my brothers and sisters. But I done well. But when we moved on this estate, and that was in 1929, I went to Monteagle School, which was on this
That's
estate.
Moving into Dagenham. Would you call this Dagenham here or Becontree?
No. Although it was a Dagenham postal address, even this is Dagenham postal address, but it's actually Barking. Right? Because the other side of the road is Dagenham. That is the boundary. Well, I went to Monteagle School, which was the juniors. Well, then from there, I went to Byfriend School, which is all just down the road from here. I went there, which was a jump up for the seniors. Well, in them days, it wasn't juniors that went in for scholarships. In your first or second year of senior school, you can still go for them scholarships. Well, although the so-called living lover was still there, life wasn't too good. It was a question of You went to school every morning, a slab of bread and jam in your one hand, your feet clapping you as you run along, and you're all hanging out the trousers. And that was how it was. Well, at Byfield School, I was encouraged. With a South African teacher, actually, a teacher by the name of Nog. And he used to give me a few lessons, even after school or during the dinner hour. Well, all right, I was always in trouble for it because I was always late on. But most of the dinner hours, of course, the family, like us kiddies who went to school, used to get free dinners. And I used to have to come from the school right up to Woodward Road here to have my dinner. And that was every day. Well, this Nog, he encouraged me with a little bit of extra tuition. And he says to me, well, why didn't you go in for a scholarship? And I didn't know what it all meant. I didn't know. So he explained it to me. He says, you get further education, you get better education because there are higher grade teachers. So I went for it. And I came out with flying colours. But whilst I was there, there was a sports teacher, a fella by the name of Stockley, a very nice fella, big fella. I was a very nifty runner. So I was put in the running class. No matter what race I went in, I was winning. Eventually I ended up running for Balkin. Well then, being at the sports at school, as you know, it was very well encouraged. I really loved rugby. So I went in the rugby team, in the school. Then I ended up playing rugby for Balkin. Well, through all this, especially the rugby, I'd passed my scholarship and I was sent to Park Modern School, which was the higher grade school. So I went to this Park Modern School where they had uniforms, of grey uniforms with red edgings on them, like the rims was edging, and you had a red peak on a grey cap. Well, I went in normal clothes. When I got there, the teachers they called me in, asked me. The headmaster called me, took me to his office, and asked me what was happening about the uniform, because it is very strict to have uniform. I asked my mother about this, because she was getting public relief, and naturally free dinner, so she got public relief, which paid the rent and any coal bills or anything like that. When I mentioned about the uniform to her, she turned around and says, I can't afford a uniform. I can't afford to pay for one. Well, I informed the teacher this. I said, well, my mother can't afford me a uniform, so I've got to come in me standard clothes. Well, she applied to the public relief to get a uniform. But they informed her that she was receiving sufficient money to pay rent, clothing, and she was getting food vouchers that she could only pay for food in the shop. Consequences, no uniform. So I had to leave the school. I was there for about 3 months. But whilst I was there, that is when I got caught up to play for Balkin rugby, because they put me in the rugby team for Balkin. And although I left there, I still carried on playing for Balkin in the rugby.
What school did you go to?
I went back to Byfriends, which was the senior school. But I was mainly receiving tuition, if you like to put it, with the rest of the class, knowing that I'd passed at James and was at the other school, they at Park Modern, they turned around and said, I was getting different lessons to what the other pupils were getting. And I was nine times out of ten, I was in a, used to have to go and sit in a big hall, and I've got different lessons, mostly essays, etc. Because, so what they've done was of no consequence to me, I've already gone through it. But they got me through there. But then you come up towards 1939. Now, in 1939, as you know, there was a, for the evacuation children to safe areas. Well, I would have left school on that Christmas, on that, the end of that term. So I was, it was considered, of course there's five brothers and sister going on this evacuees. But I was considered too old because I was leaving on the Christmas. Of course you're looking at the 1st of September. So anyway, but then again, they turn around and says, well, they're only going for a weekend. It's just an exercise. None of us knew no different. But whatever my mother done, or whatever she said, I wouldn't like to say. But I was roped in, and I could go as an helper. So I went as an helper. And I assisted them, like, with the children on the train, like giving food out and all that business, and but I was still one of the children.
Now, how was the evacuation organised? You know, what did the children have to take with them and the rest?
Well, what happened was that all families who was having children evacuated were, yeah, right. Now, all the children, all the families was notified of a date to go round to the school, go to the schools of their departure, where they enrolled. Well, we was enrolled, as it was just round the corner, was the Montego School.
That was your old junior school?
That was a junior school. So we've all gone round there. All the families, like naturally, all the kids with their gas masks and their... very few of them with a case. It was usually a bag just to carry what clothes you had. They just had their gas mask boxes slung across their shoulders and everything. And we was all mustered in the hall.
Did you have labels? Because a lot of people talk about the labels.
When we come,
sorry,
we got in the hall, and they give us all a label with our name on. That's all it was, just a name. And there was no destination or anything on. So even the parents didn't know where we were going. Well, then there was a hell of a lot of double-decker buses turned up. Well, all the children was turned around and said, well, say goodbye to your parents. And as you go through, you get on a bus and you'll be directed to the bus you go to. Now, my four brothers and sister, they were directed, but when I went to go through, they stopped me. And I had to stay with the grown-ups who was helping. They were directed on one bus. And they must have known that that was my brother and sister. So they've now put me on the same bus. So when we all going, all the kids, are, some of them with tears, my family, they was all laughing because they were glad to get away with me, lover. And so the next we knew, we was shipped off to Paddington Station. Well, when we got to Paddington, I had to keep all the kids on the bus with another lady. Keep them all on there till they emptied the other bus, some of the other buses. And then it came our turn. Well, then when we get them on the train, and it seemed to be a hell of us not knowing about the trains, the length of the train was enormous. I'm thinking of it from today's trains. You're looking at four coaches here, but 20 coaches there. And that's what these trains was like. Well, when we gets on a train, everyone's in, everyone checked. Okay, that was all right. By the way, we also had police with us as far as the station. Like, we all got on a train, there was a policeman on every bus, and they made sure that everything was safe and kept everyone away while the children got on the trains. But then when we got on a train, they started to move out. I was given big boxes, and I had to go along and give all the children a bag out of this box. And when I gave them all a bag, and they had parcels with orange, apple, some sweets, and some sandwiches. And I had to tell them, be careful, they're for your journey. Well, then they came back a short while later, after we'd given all these out, naturally, all the kids wanted to eat their sandwiches or do their sweets. They come back with a load more boxes. And I had to go round and give all the kids one of these cartons. It was like a cup carton that they pulled the top off. And that was orange drinks. And I had to give them orange drinks. But also, if any of the children wanted another drink during the course of the time of our journey, to give them one. There was plenty for them. Well, that was all right. The children was sort of getting over it, and they was all getting enjoying themselves on the train. Well, after the journey, we ended up at a place called Bath. None of us never heard of it. And we looked at it, and the train went into a siding, and none of us knew nothing, because none of us had got off the train. And all of a sudden, some of the kids started crying. They all thought they was going in to have a bath. Until it was explained to them by the teachers. Even I thought they'd know where I was. And they came along and said, no, this is a town called Bath. You're going further on. So anyway, the train came out the sidings. Of course, they put more sandwiches than that on the train. That went out the sidings. And the train went on to Midsummer Norton. Well, at Midsummer Norton, everyone off the trains, and it was a reverse procedure of what happened down at Paddington. Police was there to meet us again. Loads of buses and coaches outside, or charabancs as we called them then. There was buses and charabancs, and the kids was all got on these, and they was taken to a village hall in Chilcompton. Now, we met the so-called squire of the Chilcompton, because it was a nice little village, and there were plenty of hills and dells, and the kids said, funny side of all this. Well, then, we're all in a massive big hall, and people come in, and they were being introduced, when we were all sitting down on the floor, introduced us to these people and said, well, these are the people that you're going to stay with whilst you're here. That was okay. So people was nominating, and they was calling people out, and as they come out, and they said, you wanted some, and that's when, but there was one woman came out, she said, well, I have a farm, I have plenty of room, and I'm prepared to take six. Well, there was no family of six, only mine. There was my four brothers, my sister and me. So anyway, they've nominated my brothers and sister. That's five. Until one of them turned around and said, because they used the children, my brothers and sisters always called me Patsy. So he said, is Patsy coming with us? And this woman says, why, is there another one? Who's Patsy? I'm saying, our big brother. Oh, I'll have him. She knew that I was able to control them, so I went with them. But I had to wait, they had to wait until the rest of the children were distributed. Well, then I saw the teachers who were there, and they explained to me what was going to happen the next day, because all the children was going to go to where they were going to live and settle themselves in.
Now, what was the farm like? Do you know the name of the farm? And you know, what?
It was called the farm. It was called the farm. And it was right on top of a hill. Well, when I went there, this woman took us round. She says, right, this is your sister. She can have that room there. She says, there's two single beds in there. She said, because when my daughter comes home every weekend, she's there. Because the daughter stayed with her grandmother in Midsummer Norton. She said, she's sleeping there with Lily. That was my sister. She said, as for you boys, she said, Al, there's two double beds and there's two single beds. You sort yourselves out. So anyway, we sorted ourselves out. We all packed our gear where she'd give us places to put our gear. And she had us all downstairs to give us all a nice hot meal. Nothing was done on a gas stove. She didn't have one. Everything was done on a fire range. Well, then her husband was a miner. Well, when I say miner, he worked in the mines, but he was in control of the cage. He was a lever man, a very strong man. And when he came off shift, he's got hold of all of us kids. He said, right now, come on, kids. That's just how he spoke. You come with me. I'm going to take you round the farm. So he took us all round the bones. This is the turkey and the hen house. Ducks and the geese also go in there. He said, but you don't have to get them in there. They go in on their own. This is the cattle barn. And he took us in. He says, and I'll teach you how to milk the cows later on. He said, well, not yet. He said, there's one horse on this farm. And he took us to the top of the hill. And right down in the basement, there was a horse. And he just give a whistle. The horse looked up and come galloping up that hill. And he spoke to the horse like he was speaking to us. He said, Prince, these are your friends. Well, we was all able to stroke him. And he sort of took to us, this horse. So he says, you never call him by name when he's down the bottom of the hill. Whistle. One whistle, and he'll come up. And that is how he went on that farm. But from
have you seen animals like that before? No.
We'd only seen horses because my eldest brother, before he went into the army, he used to work for Hayes Wolf. And he drove horse and cart. We knew about horse. We never knew nothing about cattle. We never knew nothing about chickens or turkeys or ducks or only what was in the park somewhere.